Welcome to the Second Court of Appeals for our third and final case of oral argument this morning. We have one case scheduled at 10:30. And first, we'll call our third case witness. Oh, I guess I do need to introduce Justice Gabriel and Justice Meyer, if y'all weren't here when we did this earlier.
The court will now call James Bosworth to the stage. Mayor Bruce Court, Mr. James Brett Newton, the Office of the Appellate, Mr. Tony Brett, the Office of the Appellate.
May it please the court, counsel. We are here today to evaluate a unusual procedure invoked by one of our trial judges in Wichita Falls, in which a child competency hearing was held, and both myself as the attorney for the defendant and the defendant were excluded from that hearing, which took place in the chambers of the trial judge. Both of these actions bring forth both the right of the defendant to be present at all proceedings and the right of me to be there to help him and to have at least have an opportunity during this hearing process to cross-examine the child in this case. I will say that the state has responded with a case that out of the U.S. Supreme Court, Kentucky versus Stintzer, which the court has dealt with this, the U.S. Supreme Court dealt with this issue. However, I want to begin by distinguishing this case from that case. And the first and most important thing, and I can't find any cases of those cited either by myself or by the state in which the lawyer was excluded from the hearing. In Stintzer, the lawyer was part of the hearing and apparently had a chance to cross-examine. The defendant was excluded. This is the first case that I'm aware of where the lawyer wasn't allowed to be there. Usually the lawyer seems to cure some of these errors, but it didn't in this case because I was not present. I was allowed to submit questions, and so was the state. And I have no way of, I assume from the judge's reporting that some of the questions were asked. But in the preparation of this brief, I discovered for the first time that the judge had sealed the record of that hearing. So. Here's why, because it's totally useless to me to unseal it at that time, because my complaint is that I had no right to cross-examine. There wouldn't be any testimony in there that I would have used to cross-examine on the issue that was before the judge. And remember, and just procedurally, and this is in the record, okay, I had filed a motion to test and challenge the competency. Texas law places the burden of proof on me and my client.
You've got a right to ask certain questions.
I do.
And you didn't want to know the answer to those questions?
I didn't ask the questions because I wasn't at the hearing. Okay?
You submitted them in writing. And
yes.
You have to
I submitted questions in writing, and the state submitted, but I don't know whether the judge asked any of those questions at all. And I would have cross-examined anyway. Under different questions, I may have used those, I may not have. I may have asked follow-up questions. I may, this was an opportunity that I didn't have to meet my burden, and it was on a motion that I had made to test the competency, which the judge had agreed to have that hearing, and upon which I had the burden of proof. So, had I known, I had thought that the record was open, actually. I will state that to the court, and only learned from the court reporter that it had been sealed because there was no motion or order entered, and she instructed me it wasn't available to me, and she had called down here, I guess, on how to handle a sealed record, and I presume it's someplace in the record down here. But I had no notice at that time. So I guess you all have the power to unseal it and review it. But once again, my complaint doesn't depend upon that, because my complaint is that I didn't have an opportunity to present my motion. I didn't have an opportunity to cross-examine, to persuade the judge that this child was not competent, and to do that, you know, with my client present. I might say that one of the things in the state's brief that had been mentioned about there's some issues on waiver, one of them where I remarked to the judge about that the examination was discretionary, and just so that this court is aware, that was a reference to how he would conduct his questioning, not that I was waiving the right to make any cross-examination or not. But, you know, at this stage, I don't think anybody here knows what went on in that hearing, but it's not dependent upon the rights that I'm asking for, because I wanted to have the right to cross-examine. And when you open that record, you will not see my name in there, and you'll not see my client's presence noted. I might also, I did want to respond to the procedural default question. I think the objection that was made at trial was sufficient to alert the judge that our presence was there, and that the statutory invocation of the Texas Code of Criminal Procedure was sufficient on that ground. And as the court knows, the statutory rights are protected by the Due Process Clause if they're granted. And in this case, the Texas Code of Criminal Procedure grants my client the right to be present, and me the right to be there and to ask questions. None of the cases cited in opposition, or cases that I can find, deal with the child competency hearing where at least the counsel, the lawyer, wasn't allowed to be present. So I think
in the Supreme Court, their reasoning is that there was a subsequent opportunity with the defendant and counsel to cross-examine that same witness fully. And you had that same opportunity.
I did, but I didn't have a right to present my motion, and I didn't have a right to cross-examine the child on the issue of competency. The judge had already made that ruling. Stop and think. The judge had made the ruling before I was ever part of the proceeding. The judge came out and he had made that ruling after the hearing that, okay, I've questioned the child, I found her to be competent. So that ruling was made. Now, I was allowed to cross-examine at that point, but I was denied my opportunity to meet that burden of proof during that competency hearing, which I had requested. I think in Stenser they were present. I think they had an opportunity, but I'm not certain about that. I'd have to review that. And they were present. I know that because that's referenced specifically. The troubling aspect that I have about this, and I'm not, of course, I the Kentucky law that I've researched since the state's brief indicates that. Kentucky has a little different procedure than we do on competency, in that there's no burden of proof on the competency issue in Kentucky like there is in Texas. In other words, the judge makes sort of an independent examination, and there isn't any burden of proof. And let me give you a cite on that. Muncy versus Commonwealth, 213 Southwest 2nd, 1019. Yes, Muncy versus Commonwealth, M-U-N-C-I-E. And there's cases cited after that, and appears to be good law. At least it has the little plus sign at the top of the Lexus deal, but they, there the defendant had, and his counsel had no burden of proof like we here have here in Texas. Plus, of course, you know, the major thing is the exclusion of the lawyer, and I don't know how you get around that if you're going to have secret proceedings. I just think that's bad form. I don't think it's contemplated. I don't see any place that it's been done. I suppose it's, since it's done in civil cases, in family law matters, perhaps that's the thought of the court, because they can examine children in camera without attorneys present on civil matters. But anyway, I think those are the most important things. It's the sole point raised on this appeal. I ask that the court reverse this case and remand it for a new trial. And, yes.
Maybe I'm confused.
Okay.
Is the reason that you have a challenge for competency is because the record is sealed? I mean, if the judge is asking, do you know the difference between right and wrong, and
right,
you said, I haven't a clue, you don't know that because it's sealed, hence you haven't challenged whether the ruling is correct or not.
Right.
Am I correct?
Correct. I have challenged the procedure. I don't know what, and it,
wouldn't mandamus or something be available to you to cause the record to be unsealed so that that would be kind of a, I mean, I'm hearing you.
I suppose you're correct. And I did kind of think about that, but I really don't think that it cures the error, because my complaint is I didn't have the opportunity. What good would it do if I see something? Well, then it would perhaps make it
kind of had,
you know, two errors, yes.
A, I didn't have a right to be there, and yeah, made the wrong ruling, but the wrong ruling was precluded at this point because I
yeah
didn't see what questions and answers were about.
Yeah.
Okay.
But anyway, it may be, but that would be something the judge did on his own anyway, but if you're complaining about the procedure to start with,
let me ask you a question.
Yeah. Correct.
Is there not case law that says that the hearing didn't even have to be conducted once you made that finding based upon the video, which would make this whole issue kind of...
Well, except that the if he had started out, he could have done it a different way. He could have had the child in front of the jury. I'm not sure he necessarily had to have it out beside the jury anyway. But he had agreed that we could have our hearing, so we had no reason to believe that a hearing wouldn't be held. Does that make sense? Yes, we can have a hearing, and then he looked at the video. I'm not sure I pointed out to him that the rule says an examination by the court, and that's when he decided to go ahead and have the examination. I did request that because I thought the video was insufficient. And, of course, if I would have had a chance to cross-examine the child at that hearing, that may have changed the judge's mind. We don't know that. I think you're talking about the Romines case, and I'm not sure that it's that clear. I read that through, and I'm not sure that it's clear that he didn't have to have that hearing. No. Assume that he did have to?
That he didn't have to have the hearing.
Okay.
Then how are you harmed? If he didn't have to have the hearing anyway,
okay,
how are you harmed?
Well, I'm still entitled to cross-examine the child on the issue of the child's competency and have the judge make a ruling, even if it were to occur during a jury trial, no matter what. And that didn't happen. I was the judge made the ruling before I could, because I wasn't present at the hearing.
Okay, but if Romine is correct, you wouldn't have the right to ask those questions, be it outside the presence of the jury or in front of the jury.
I would have a right to do it in front of the jury and challenge the competency.
But
of course, I had made a motion. Yes, I did try. That's why I filed the motion ahead of trial. That's why the motion is in the record that says, Judge, I want a hearing on the competency of this child. And the judge says, okay, I will give you that hearing. If the judge says okay, then Am I supposed to object and say, I mean, I see your point, but hypothetically, that would be if the judge says, I'm not going to give you a hearing. I've ruled the child is competent, and that's it. That's a different objection. That's a different ball game altogether. So,
what is it exactly that you're asking for?
The case be reversed and remanded for a new trial, and that
for
the proceed.
And
That's another.
Suppose that there is a new competency hearing,
mm-hmm.
and the child is found to be competent. Then why would there be a necessity of a new trial? We're right back where we started.
Well, for one thing, is the child has, it's kind of time sensitive, because if you go back and the child's older now.
Okay.
And so if that's relief that you wanted to grant, I would have to consider that, I guess, that to go back and have a competency hearing where I had a chance to do that. But once again, that would be, you have a different child, a different situation. So I don't know the answer to that as a...
Mr. Rasmussen,
your
point in terms of critical stage trial and burden on the defendant is in evidence that the child does not have competency.
Right.
Is lost because of the passage of time and the child's maturity. And so the question of whether there was error here bears towards a reversal.
Right.
Not a reversal and remand. If the facts of this case are then frozen in time as to the judge's determination at the matter without the defendant's right of confrontation, we don't cure that by sending it back for a new trial. If the new trial can't be done
with right.
the same level of question of confidence.
Well, wouldn't that be analogous to the trial court not having a hearing on a motion for competency to stand trial, but be reversed and send those back, and obviously the situation, wouldn't it be analogous to that, or would it not?
I think, yes, it could be. Because what you're doing is you're looking at historical facts, and then you're trying a competency issue. And then you bring in other evidence as to... what was said, what's the child, at that particular time, and you try to recreate that, which is, I guess, that's what we do at all trials.
I heard my colleague's question.
Yeah.
But I asked you a different question. The different question I asked was that in this proceeding, how do you get back to a point in time that's lost in terms of competency of the child at that time, not 2 years later, a year and a half. Days passed for the child to gain maturity. You never get back to the same place you were whenever this
you can't perfectly
event occurred.
No, you can't perfectly get back to that. No. No. And that's why I think it's, important for this court to rule upon this procedure so it doesn't happen like this in the future.
May it please the court, I'm John Brasher with Wichita County District Attorney's Office. No one can read page 10 of my brief and think that I approve of the exclusion of the defendant and the attorney. In fact, I agree with what was stated in McMillan, an Ohio case, that this raises the specter of impropriety when you have a victim in the judge's chambers, and this judge is supposed to appear to be neutral, and everybody else is outside of those chambers. I have no doubt that Judge Price was trying to make the child comfortable, but good intentions aside, the issue is whether the right of confrontation has been violated. And the starting point, I believe, is Kentucky v. Stenser. In Stenser, the court found that the exclusion of the defendant at the hearing did not violate the right of confrontation. And the court looked at several factors. Number one, the limited nature of a competency hearing, where the facts aren't gone into, or at least they're not supposed to be gone into. They looked at the fact that the child did testify at trial in the defendant's presence, and they noted that the child was subject to full cross-examination. So unless the scope of this 601 hearing was exceeded, the defendant had full opportunity for cross-examination. In fact, he doesn't... Judge, Justice Gabriel, I'm not sure that there is a burden of proof at the competency hearing itself. Rule 601 states that the trial court is to examine the child and make a determination. I haven't found any law that says a 601 hearing is an adversarial hearing where somebody has the burden of proof. His burden of proof is to show that the trial court abused its discretion in finding the child competent based upon all of the evidence, not just the evidence at the 601 hearing.
Okay, but the defendant isn't going to ask any questions at the hearing.
No.
The lawyer is.
Well, I don't...
So how do we get...
I don't have any case law that says that the lawyer gets to ask any questions at a 601 hearing. Rule 601 says the court is to examine.
But why be there?
Well, no, you could... I guess one reason to be there is to find out if the judge actually exceeded the scope of the hearing.
Okay, well, that standing alone wasn't there, which is different.
No.
From Kentucky, right?
I'm not familiar with Kentucky.
Okay, different from Stenzer, right?
And in Stenzer, the attorney was present, and the attorney, in fact, asked questions.
That's like a really major difference between what happened here and what happened there?
Well, that's certainly distinguishable, but he still had the opportunity at the trial to go into the issue of competency. In fact, you know, this court looks at all the evidence, so he could go into that, you know, and inquire if she understood the obligation to tell the truth, right from wrong, and to be able to articulate the facts of the case.
And what was the point of having a competency hearing?
There, in this case, there wasn't a point. You know, before the judge had this 601 hearing, he had already found the defendant to be competent. And that was based upon the child advocacy audio. I believe in my brief I incorrectly referred to it as a video, but it wasn't. It was an audio. That audio was played in the presence of Mr. Rasmussen and his client. And the judge stated that based upon what he'd heard on that audio, there wasn't even a need for the 601 hearing, but he got talked into it by a very good lawyer. But I have no doubt that anything occurred at the hearing to cast doubt on that determination that had already been made. And Mr. Rasmussen, I think, could have had the record. I don't find anything in the record that would indicate that the judge wouldn't have allowed him access to what took place in chambers prior to questioning the child. He didn't ask, so we don't know. Well, I think it bears on the issue because he could go into it. The child's still subject to a full cross-examination. He wasn't deprived of that. And I just want to make a few comments about the 601 hearing. Again, I've already mentioned that 601 specifically states that the trial judge is to examine the court. And again, I've found no cases where there's any authority that the defendants get to question anybody at a hearing. I believe it's discretionary, and I believe there is case law that says the judge can do it, but it's not required. And relating to competency, a 601...
The fact that they can do it, but not required, is gutted if they aren't there.
I don't believe so,
because to have the court's can there, it's by implication, they're supposed to be there.
I'm not saying he shouldn't have been there, and that's how I started off my argument. I'm saying it's not a violation of the Sixth Amendment. You know, if you've had a full opportunity at trial to go into whatever you want to go into in the presence of the defendant, and, you know, a 601 hearing is not even a standalone hearing. And what I mean by that is whether the trial judge had abused his discretion isn't even determined solely based upon that hearing. It's unlike a suppression hearing where this court decides whether the trial court abused its discretion by looking at that hearing alone. I mean, that's the general rule. That's not the rule for a competency hearing. You look at all the evidence, and he hasn't argued that this child wasn't competent. And he could have had the record of that hearing.
And are you arguing that your client's constitutional rights were violated by not allowing him to be there and have counsel there?
Instant.
Look at Rule 601. Witnesses are presumed to be competent, except for, witnesses are presumed to be competent. Then it gives a procedure for insane people and for children. So the burden is on him to overcome that presumption of competence. How can he do that when he's excluded, he and his client are excluded from the
He can do that at trial by subjecting that child to a full cross-examination.
But
because
you don't think, and you think that that's relevant in front of the jury? You don't think that the prosecutor wouldn't objected if he started asking questions about knowing the difference between right or wrong? I mean, that's bolstering if you ask.
I believe some of those questions were asked. At the trial, I'm not sure if it was the defense or the state, but I believe there were some questions about the child knowing right from wrong.
Mr. Bashir, the child was 4 or 5 years old.
At the time of trial, the child was 6 and a half.
At the time of the incident, the child was 4 or 5 years
old. That's right. I believe five.
Was it four or was it five?
I believe it was five. If not, it was approaching five.
And your brief, you cite on page 9, two cases that you say these, whenever the counsel says it's a case of first impression, you disagree. And you cite two cases, Russell against Dave, Blair. And those two cases are factually different.
I believe they are, but...
Both of those cases, counsel was present. Ask questions.
That's right. Counsel
so
was present.
So we have no specific Texas case.
No, there is no case in Texas where the attorney was excluded. And I haven't found any case where that's happened except the Ohio case in McMillan. And in McMillan, well, there's actually two cases. There's an unpublished opinion. It cites McMillan, but McMillan's the published opinion.
So we're in position here with this objection raised, properly raised, and preserved as to whether the Sixth Amendment of the United States Constitution, the right of confrontation, is in fact thwarted by.
That's the issue before this court, and no Texas case has dealt with that.
What do you say about the questions that I've asked Mr. Rasmussen to the effect that the competency question is frozen in time, and that when you are looking at things multiple years later, it's a totally different competency question?
Well, that's why you couldn't remand for a new competency hearing. I certainly agree with that.
So reversal is the result of a improper violation.
Reversal for a new trial.
Get back to the same competency question. If there was error here, then the error is not capable of being addressed in a new trial.
Judge, I'm not aware of any authority that says that basically the case is over with. You know, if the court's made an error in not conducting a competency hearing. Sure.
And if the maturity level is enhanced by the passage of time, you don't challenge that, do you?
Oh, absolutely not. I mean, if it's remanded for a new trial, then, you know, the issue of competency is going to be based upon the age of that child then, the maturity level of that child.
So the question before us is more is as much of whether the facts of this case are in control of the child that is 5 years old at the time of this pre-kindergarten.
Judge, I agree it is a critical stage, but, you know, that Stentzer in footnote 17 specifically states whether the proceeding is critical or crucial. That's not the test.
Well, it wouldn't be there because it's not a burden of proof on the defendant to show that the child was not competent.
Well, still, though, Judge, the proper inquiry under a confrontation clause is the opportunity for cross-examination, and I believe that occurred.
At the trial.
And after a finding was already made. In fact, the finding already made before the 601 hearing ever occurred.
Thank you, Brian.
Well, kind of the issue is not whether the child was competent. That's not before it.
He hasn't raised that, that's right.
The record is sealed and it has not been asked to be unsealed. The question is, what is the remedy if we find a violation of this person's rights? What is the remedy of it? Your position is there was no violation because he was able to cross-examine the child during trial.
That's
his
right.
Position is there was a violation, and then what's the remedy of it? What's the remedy for it? So let's just throw the question to you. Suppose that there was a violation. All right.
Okay.
What remedy do you perceive as what remedies are available to us?
I think the remedy is simply to remand for a new trial.
But,
And I realize you're not going to have the same situation that existed a couple of years earlier, but I think the remedy is still a remand for a new trial. In conducting the cross-examination at trial, I think some of the things that the court can look at in deciding, you know, whether there was an opportunity for a full cross-examination is the fact that Mr. Rasmussen had access to the audio, he had access to the child's father, had access to the child's mother, to the child's brother, and all of those people certainly could have provided Mr. Rasmussen information about the child's intellect or her ability to relate transactions, if there was anything there. I don't believe there was anything there. He had access to school records. And what's unusual about this case is he actually had access to the child. That doesn't happen very often. Mr. Rasmussen interviewed the child, and no doubt he went into far more detail than anything that occurred at that competency hearing. And again, Mr. Rasmussen didn't even ask for a transcript of the competency hearing to find out what the judge in fact asked. He did submit questions, and those same questions could have been asked at trial. Again, you know, I've only found the one case, McMillan. If the court disagrees with that, I'm likely going to lose, but that's my case. I don't have anything other than McMillan to offer this court. Thank you.
Gosh, thank you all for... Oh, rebuttal?
Just very briefly.
Don't take anything out of what I've said.
No.
I haven't made it.
Well, we all need to go eat and do so. I would say that on page 11 of my brief, there's case citings dealing with the burden of proof on the competency issue, which you can dig out. I think the main case is Beavers versus State. There's some other cases and some old Court of Criminal Appeals case. I would say from your questions that you have captured the issue completely, and so I don't have much to add. I would say that, I would rather have an acquittal, but that's not going to happen. I don't think that's appropriate on this stage, so I think a remand for a new trial would be the only thing, and I think the attempt back at the trial level would be to recreate the competency, like Justice Meyer said, of the child at that time, and that would be... something that would have to be done at that trial, but this is a troubling procedure, and I do appreciate the court's attention. And if you don't have any more questions, I thank you very much. So, and thank you for having it at 10:30, so we can not have to get out at the crack of dawn to drive up and drive to Fort Worth. So.
All right. Well, I was going to thank y'all for driving all the way
from okay.
Wichita Falls. And, you know, sometimes we come up there and sit probably time. Next year to come over here and sit.
We like it when you come, too.
All right. Judge, I rode with Mr. Rasmussen. I'm not sure I have a lot of back.
Yeah, he's...
All right, the case is submitted, and the court is adjourned. Thank you.
All rise.